This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. John Sayles is one of America's most successful and best-known independent filmmakers. Before writing and directing such movies as The Return of the Secaucus Seven, The Brother from Another Planet, Mate Juan, and Eight Men Out, he wrote novels and short stories. Now Sayles has a new novel called Los Gusanos, about Cuban Americans. Los Gusanos means the worms. It's the word Fidel Castro used to describe the Cubans who fled to Miami after he came to power. Sayles also has a new movie coming out later this summer. He says there are some things that you could do in a novel that you can't do in a film.
Certainly scope is one. Los Gusanos goes back in time. It's told through the point of view of maybe 15, 20 characters, and some of those characters we get to know well enough to go back into their personal histories as back as far as the 30s in Cuba. And I think that switching of time periods and that switching of points of view is very difficult to do justice to in a movie. In a movie, you may have three points of view, like an omniscient point of view, and then the guy with the chainsaw and the guy who's running from the guy with the chainsaw. And that's about what an audience can handle in a movie, whereas in a book, you can stop. There are chapter breaks. You can pick it up again, and you can realize, oh, I'm in this person's head now.
Are there literary or novelistic things that you've tried to do in movies that just didn't work, that made you realize some of the limitations of film?
I think more when I've been writing the screenplay and trying to access more than a couple points of view. Certainly when I was writing Eight Men Out, what I found was that I had about 12 characters, and I wanted to know what was happening with them. And when I tried to get into their personal point of view, it really fragmented the movie more than I wanted it fragmented. So I ended up with telling the story in a fairly omniscient point of view, and then having one or two of the characters who you attached yourself emotionally to more than the others. So you might get more personal scenes with them rather than just the baseball scenes and the more public scenes. But I definitely found that I couldn't actually get into the point of view of the different characters.
You haven't written a book for a while, right?
No, in the last 10, 13 years, I've done maybe three short stories, and that's all the fiction writing I've done, except for, a lot of research on Los Gusanos. But finally, I just sat down and wrote it in about a year.
So why did you want to get back to the form of the novel?
Well, it's a story that I wanted to tell for a long time. I've been going down to the Miami area since the mid-50s when I had relatives who lived down there, and got interested in that community, the development of what at first seemed like a foreign city on American shores, and then just as people began to assimilate, what was the nature of that? What's it like to be an exile as opposed to being an immigrant? And once I start something, I wrote the first couple chapters 13 years ago, the characters kind of demand that you finish the story. That happened with Eight Men Out, which I wrote 11 years before I got to make it. You feel like you've made a deal with those characters to tell their story, and though you may walk away and do different things, they're still there.
Several of the stories that you've written or told in movies have had to do with activism, or with the decision to be active in whether it's labor or politics. Have you ever been an activist of any sort in your life?
Certainly not a leading activist. I've been in marches. One of the difficulties that I was just talking about information is the more you know, the more you feel like you need to know before you jump off and do something. Certainly people who go into the armed forces, there's that question of, am I here to think or am I here to follow orders? And once you give yourself up to that, probably the best thing to do is really to just follow orders as best you can and support the people who you're supposed to support. But there's a larger question of, do I really want to be somebody who just leaves the thinking up to everybody else? So a political movement can be like an army. And the minute that you start to really ask questions and say, this is not black and this is not white, it probably means that where you plug into any one movement is going to be somewhat limited.
If you're just joining us, my guest is screenwriter, film director, and novelist John Sayles, and he has a new novel, his first in a bunch of years. It's called Los Gusanos. No, your new novel, Los Gusanos, you did not, from what I've read about this, you did not have an agent. You sent the book yourself to some publishers who you'd singled out as being good possible publishers for it. And then you did the negotiating yourself as well.
Yeah.
I was interested in that because I think most people choose to have an agent for several reasons, one of which has to do with wanting somebody to be a buffer between you and the financial negotiations. I was wondering why you opted to not have an agent, and if that had anything to do with having to do all this work yourself in the film world and being used to it.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the book was pretty much what I wanted it to be. You know, I really didn't feel like I wanted to go through a process with a publisher whereby they looked at it and they had their feelings and they had meetings about it and they came back to me and said, you know, these are the changes we're interested in, whatever. I certainly had run it by lots of people who had read it, who kind of in an amorphous way served as my editor, you know, who in the, you know, case of the people who were Cubans who read it, they helped me with the Spanish and with the details of you know, Cuban life that I felt shaking on. Some people just said, you know, I don't understand something. And that's really, when I have worked with an editor on a book, that's really what they've done, is if they just asked me questions. So I felt like the book, in a way, had already been edited as much as I wanted it edited. As far as having an agent as a buffer between me and the financial negotiations, I make enough money making movies that, you know, certainly working on a book for 13 years is not a good economic move. You know, to go back to writing novels, if you've been writing screenplays, you know, even the lowest paid screenwriter, which I was when I first started, you know, I got $10,000 to rewrite Piranha, and my second novel had, you know, gotten me $10,000, and that took a year and a half to write. So the financial thing was not that important to me, to auction it to the highest bidder and create some kind of, you know, feeding frenzy that would bring me more money. And then also, since I wasn't going to be in this kind of relationship as an employee, as somebody who was going to then go back and do some rewrites, I wasn't so worried about the power relationship getting messed up by the fact that I might have said, well, if you can offer more money, or if you can offer me, you know, it was as important for me that I wasn't lost in the shuffle, that I wasn't the 10th book on their list for that particular, you know, season of publishing, or that, you know, that they put out at least 50,000 copies in the first run. Those were as important to me as what the advance was. And most of the offers were almost identical, which kind of told me, you know, where my book stood and where publishing stood at the time that I entered it.
My guest is novelist, screenwriter, and director John Sayles. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is writer and film director John Sayles, and he has a new novel called Los Gusanos. You have a new film that's scheduled to come out soon called City of Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a preview of what the film is like?
It's like a lot of my other movies in that there's a large cast of characters. It's about the kind of melting pot politics that happen in small cities. I think cities in America, very often the day-to-day politics are not ideological but practical. And so it really boils down to, you know, if your ethnic group is holding sway at that moment, your cousins are going to get jobs. And if it's not, your cousins aren't going to get jobs. You know, where does your particular ethnic group, racial group, family group stand at that time? And so City of Hope is set in a kind of mythical New Jersey city called Hudson City that, you know, the main ethnic groups at the moment are, you know, white Italian Americans, black people, and Hispanic people, and the racial mix is changing.
You live in a Jersey City called Hoboken, which is over the river from New York, but you shot your movie, I think, in Cincinnati?
Yeah.
How come you couldn't shoot it in Jersey?
Well, various reasons, mostly to do with that we had a fairly low budget and that we could just get more on the screen if we shot in Cincinnati. The main practical one is that Cincinnati is a much less condensed city. You know, people don't triple park there. A traffic jam lasts a minute. A traffic jam in Jersey City lasts half a day. It's not in a flight pattern. And so a very practical thing when you're shooting a movie is how many airplanes go overhead per hour. In Cincinnati, it's almost zero. In Jersey City or anywhere in the New York hub, it's dozens. And so you're always waiting or saying, oh, God, we're going to have to fix this in the, you know, the sound mix.
No, I take it this is an independent production.
Yeah.
But do you have a studio to distribute it?
Yeah, the Samuel Goldwyn Company is distributing it, and it's going to be opening in mid-August in New York City, and then a week or so later in most other places.
Now, I know you like to have final cut and mm-hmm. as much independence as possible in making mm-hmm. the movie. So when you entered into this deal with Goldwyn, mm-hmm. what were your specifications about what they could or couldn't say about the movie?
Actually, Goldwyn picked the movie up after it was done. We showed it at the Sundance Film Festival. Mm-hmm. The financing came from a pre-sale to home video to RCA Columbia Video. And it was basically, here's the script, you know, we don't know who's going to be in it yet, but, you know, don't count on that there being any major stars in it. And here's our track record. And what you see is what you get. And so it really was a deal where Final Cut was implicit in the contract.
What do the studios consider to be your biggest success?
I think the only things that are on the radar are studio movies, so probably Eight Men Out, which still hasn't made its money back, but certainly as far as, getting attention within that world and having players, actors who they consider, oh, these are people who are in our movies as well. Eight Men Out was the most likely to be kind of considered, this is a somewhat Hollywood movie. You know, it was distributed by Orion, which is a real Hollywood studio. Financially, I don't think anything of ours has made enough money to even show up on the meter. all my movies together, I've directed 7 movies now, combined haven't cost $20 million. And that's, the average Hollywood movie is creeping toward $20 million for production costs.
I read somewhere that you've been acting in Italian and Japanese movies to make some extra money.
Well, not to make any money. For the fun of it. Certainly, it's always instructive to me and fun to work in other people's movies as an actor. And how can you turn down a working vacation to Okinawa or to Milan? And I happened to have some time off. It was when I was actually writing the novel. I happened to have some time off from movie making. Where I had to be at a certain place at a certain time and got to go over and see how other film crews work, see how other directors work. And it always, I think, helps me to work as an actor and then think about, okay, what was very helpful to me on the set?
What's something that you learned from working in a Japanese or Italian movie?
I think in general, it's more the experience of just working as an actor in a movie. Mm-hmm. When you're sitting around the set and trying to stay in character, what would help you stay in character? What information about the flow of the day, when are we going to get to your scene, would help me? When can I get on the set? What information, when you finally do get to shoot, is going to help you as far as the coverage? It's one thing as an actor to, kind of take care of yourself. And it's another thing when the director can really give you an idea, okay, we're only going to do this from 2 different angles. So you can really blow yourself out emotionally in this first angle because this is the close-up angle. And then we're going to do kind of a wide shot that's going to be an establishing shot. And so if you've already kind of blown yourself out emotionally and you don't really have much left, that doesn't matter because we're only going to use the first 3 lines anyway. Whereas if you don't have that information, you're always kind of holding a little back and you may walk away from the set feeling like, geez, I could have done better. And as a director, what I really want my actors to feel at the end of the day is that they got to do their best stuff. They got to give it their best shot. And always as an actor, I'm picking up ways to be a better director.
So you don't get offers from American movies to act?
Oh, now and then, very small things. I've been in some independent features, but usually I'm busy. And most, big studio movies, even if the casting director or the director is interested in me working, it's like a 5-week commitment. So the lower budget movies, which the whole movie is only 5 weeks, so if you're playing a small part, you're only going to be there 2 days, are more likely to coincide with my schedule.
Let me talk to you a little bit about TV. The series that you started, Shannon's Deal, unfortunately did not get renewed for another series. What was the grand scheme in your mind when you started it? What were you hoping it would be, and how close did you feel you were able to get it? I know you pulled out of the series, but I'm sure you were still emotionally involved with it on some level.
Yeah, well, the grand scheme was the interest in working on a character for a period of time. I mean, one of the things that you can't really do in a movie is go into more than one character in a lot of depth. It's a great chance for actors to work in some kind of depth, and it's very rarely used for that. And so one of the things that I wanted to do is provide a couple of the actors, a couple of the characters, this time, this bunch of episodes where we could see different aspects of their character. In fact, their character could develop rather than being a cop show or something like that where the person is going to be the same every week, and it's just the villains who change. And I've seen other TV shows have done that. Certainly Hill Street Blues did a good job of taking characters and taking them a ways down the road emotionally with their personal story.
I was just wondering if the experience on the whole was good enough for you to ever want to try TV again.
Sure. I mean, my main feeling was I want the shows to be good, and I felt like the shows ended up being good. And I was never in it for the long run of saying I want this to last forever, even though the shows may fall off in quality. So I felt like I was able to do good work there, and that's really what I cared about the most.
Well, John Sayles, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Filmmaker, writer, and novelist John Sayles. He has a new novel, his first in over 10 years. It's called Los Gusanos.